Well, our next guest, a frequent guest to our program, and a new paper that was released examining the household savings in Canada between 1981 and 2015 with a focus on us here in Atlantic Canada. Is it a good story? Is it a troubling story? That's what we intend to find out with our guest in the studio this afternoon. And Jackson Doart is here with us. Jackson, welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm not bad. How are you, Sheldon?
I'm surviving everything. You are co-author of this report. Let's talk about why was this subject important? What was it about this that compelled you to write about it?
Well, this is kind of the second half of a project that David Morrell, my co-author, and I have been working on in the fall. You had me on to discuss our first paper, which was about private sector capital investment in Atlantic Canada. So that was one project. And the other we wanted to look into was the household sector. And you commonly hear in the media about the personal debt to income ratio, which is rising in Canada. We thought, well, that's one metric, but let's have a look at another one. And we get a similarly worrying story, I have to say, from what we've done, which is to look at household savings rates.
The debt ratio, we're told that for every dollar we earn, we actually owe $1.40. Savings, we're not saving as much as we should, or as much as other people are across this country?
Correct. And I would say the most interesting method is compared to what we used to. Because in the 1980s, the average Nova Scotian saved $1,400, or about 14.5% of his or her annual income. Now the average person is in the hole by about $1,000 a year, which actually means a negative savings rate. So people are consuming more than they are taking in disposable income, including pension contributions.
Evaluating provincial trends, it says you did so in a couple of ways.
Yeah, so we have two metrics that we use for the paper. The first is what we call the unadjusted savings rate. So that is just a straight calculation of consumption compared to disposable income, a raw savings rate, as it were. The one that we call the net savings rate is the numbers that I just rehearsed to you. Mm-hmm. And those are ones that include money that people are putting away for pensions. So a bit more accurate, as it were, as a measurement of savings.
Reading here, the paper confirms worries about personal finances in the regions, according to Dr. Marco Navarro-Gini, the president and CEO of AIMS. How worrying? How concerned should we be?
Well, it's not a good sign for the economy in general. It means that there's probably a dearth of investment in local business, and some of that comes from personal savings. And it also makes one worry about the coming decades, because if people aren't putting money away now, it means that later on they'll have access to less of it. And at AIMS, we spend a lot of time talking about public finance, what the government is doing with its money, or our money collectively. But I think on this occasion, it was good to take a look at the household sector as well.
Jackson Doart is here. He's a co-author of a report on household savings in Atlantic Canada. Is this a signal that our wages aren't high enough? We're going to go back to that $15 minimum wage. We're not saving enough. We're not saving as much. Why? Do we know?
We put forward a few explanations in the paper that might explain it. From these, in order to find these out, we looked at economic theory. We looked at other studies, including long-range studies in the United States. The OECD has worked on this. And they've come up with a few factors which influence the per capita savings rate. So one of them, which is very pertinent to all of Canada, but to our region in particular, is the aging population. So we have a higher, what we call an old age ratio, so the proportion of the population that is above the age of 65. In Nova Scotia right now, it's 17.7% of the population. And when you have a larger ratio, it's going to have an effect on the savings rate, because when people are older and in retirement, they're tending not to save, they're tending to draw down savings they already have. So that's one explanation. Others include low interest rates. It's cheaper to borrow. People are spending more of money from credit. Another factor that we talk about is government spending habits. So one area in the economic literature is that people's spending habits can be a response to government spending habits, where if governments are balancing their budgets and paying down debt and generally being more fiscally responsible, the household saving rate tends to go down. Whereas when the governments aren't doing so, it tends to go up. So these are some of the factors that we have. Though I'd also mention the disposable income. This is because this is important for one of our recommendations. You talk about the difference in wages. Nova Scotia, over the last decade, has not grown quite as much as Canada in terms of per capita disposable income. Mm-hmm. But it's keeping a fair pace. And one of our recommendations for the paper is that one way that you could give people access to more disposable income is if they weren't taxed as high.
There's something to be said about that, but as we know, government services, government expenses, and governments grow. Mm-hmm. Governments have been growing, and government spending has been growing per capita. Healthcare is a huge part of that.
Do they have to, though?
And that's the rub. That's the problem that we're seeing when we're talking about, and you referenced the older demographic, the older generation. I remember hearing when my father-in-law first bought his house, as much money as he could get from a bank 45 years ago was $1,500.
Yeah.
That was, you know, access to capital, access to credit. You had to save. If you wanted something, you had to do without and to save for it. Are we just at that point where it's just easier to buy it on credit? That credit's just too easy to get, and that's why we're spiraling or struggling to put more money in the bank?
It's indisputable that credit is easier to get now. One thing that is difficult to quantify but may be a factor here as well is a kind of social value about savings. I mean, you mentioned your father. I mean, older generations, as you say, had to save, and it became a kind of societal ethic. Our society doesn't necessarily have that same impetus for people where there isn't the same fear of debt or the same fear of not having savings. But the realities for people who aren't able to keep pace with their spending are there nonetheless. And it seems perhaps a bit paternalistic to be, as it were, telling people what to do with their money. But I think there probably is more of a role in the wider culture, perhaps not from government, but also a social factor of encouraging people to be more responsible with their money.
You say taxation is a big part of why we don't have as much money in our jeans at the end of the month or at the end of the year. Does it have to be, is it the taxes like the HST? Is it the income tax? Which is the biggest burden?
Well, I guess income taxes are a bigger burden proportionally. Ames was opposed to the HST hike and would be in favor of reversing it. Income taxes are another factor. I think that there is a very strong argument for not just lowering the taxes, but simplifying the tax code. I mean, look at ways to flatten the system so that it's easier for people to pay their taxes, so that there isn't a penalty for people who work harder and go out and are able to earn a bit more. Bracket creep is another thing to think about in Atlantic Canada. This is a recommendation of our paper. It's very unfair to people who whose marginal tax rate gets affected by inflation and being pushed into a new tax bracket when they don't have any greater purchasing power. That takes more money away from them. Nova Scotia is one of only three provinces, Manitoba and PEI are the other two, that don't index their tax brackets to inflation. That's, I think, a fairly easy change to make, and it would be one that's very much on the side of the taxpayer.
And as you point out, bracket creep is a big issue, and the Liberals in the campaign said they were going to raise the basic personal exemption, but it's still not indexed.
Correct. Well, this is a thing that one hears all the time. I'm from PEI, and every once in a while the government will say, well, we're raising the personal exemption, but what are they basing that increase on? Is it indexed to anything? Is there any explanation for it just besides them saying, well, we think this would be a good idea? I think what we need a lot more of when it comes to government policy is, I mean, I know evidence-based policy is kind of a cliche, but I think there needs to be a little bit more rigor to where it's coming from. I mean, raising the personal exemption and flattening the tax system as a whole, I think, is a good idea. But the actual implementation of something or a discussion of it needs to come with a lot of analytic rigor.
Jackson Dart, flatten the system. Is that code for flat tax?
I think flat tax is a great idea. It was very successful in Alberta, which they've done away with now. But having a high personal exemption and then a rate that doesn't allow for all of these distorting credits, boutique credits in the system. We're going to be doing a paper on this, so perhaps you can have me back to talk more about that once that's completed.
You can bet on it. This paper is up now. It's on the website. You can view the entire document at aims.ca. I agree with many of the points that you've raised here, that there are some challenges in our part of the world, and that for some of us, if you have the capacity to set aside some dough, It really makes sense. But again, there are those who are challenged by life and sure, sometimes expenses, that like groceries and rent kind of get in the way.
What we're finding here is very much that it suggests that a lot of people are, as it were, living paycheck to paycheck, which is too bad. So yeah, what we're presenting here is information, a society-wide view of savings. It isn't to say that, anyone or even most people affected by this are necessarily doing so out of choice. Part of the reason that we're focused on government policy is that decisions that the state makes about how much money they're taking away from people does have an influence on this kind of thing. And we think it would be a very positive step if, when they're making these kinds of decisions, they have this kind of information in mind, because I'm not necessarily sure that they do.
So this is more for the decision makers than the general population?
I would say both. Yep. For the decision makers in the sense of looking at our recommendations for policy, which I think is very good. But also, I think if you're an average person looking at these tables, it does give a bit of a picture as to what our society is doing now in terms of personal finance. And I think that that is a subject that your average person ought to be interested in.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming in. Thanks for the explanation.
Thank you.
And we'll invite people to go to the aims.ca website to learn more about household savings in Atlantic Canada. Jax? Yeah?
Oh, one more thing. I just want to say thank you, by the way, for having us on a couple weeks ago to talk about our platform. Because we got a lot of good feedback from that. So thanks for having us on.
Did that did anybody say it pushed the needle for them one way or the other?
You mean the platform itself?
Yeah, yeah.
They didn't actually talk about it much in the context of the election, strangely. It was mostly engaging with the ideas we had, which were really good. We had some good substantive feedback of actually some people from the experts from the actual fields that we were talking about saying, hey, that's a really good idea, or here's a suggestion for how this could be refined. So it's definitely a project that we're interested in working on more.
Like to add to the conversation in a positive, progressive way. Thanks, Jackson.